What's up, everybody? It's LG Doucette here. You're listening to The First Mint, a podcast where we talk about NFTs and the world of Web3. The podcast comes out every Monday morning and occasionally on Wednesdays. And if you want more of this content, please visit us on Twitter at The First Mint. On the morning of January 17th, 2022, around 7 a.m. Eastern Time, a Twitter account at NFT Ethics posted a very long Twitter thread about a certain person in the NFT space. The thread pretty much went into extreme detail about how the individual had been allegedly frauding people, scamming them, creating multiple accounts, and going out of their way to really squeeze a lot of money out of the NFT community and being very dishonest in the process. The individual in question, an account that goes by the name of Beanie Maxi. The NFT ethics thread didn't just show that Beanie Maxi, a very well-known influencer in the space with like 150,000 followers or so, the thread didn't just show that Beanie Maxi had been, you know, doing some questionable stuff and probably lying to a lot of their followers. It also went on to dox him, which in the space means reveal their true identity. I mean, really, the only way for them to show how Beanie had been scamming people or allegedly scamming people was to trace back the individual's real identity to various different companies that they had owned, accounts that they had started, and also a history outside of crypto of similar questionable practices. The NFT space and the Web3 space is a relatively new industry, and the term influencer, although being known and well-established in Web2 on places like Instagram, is still in its infancy in terms of what it's going to come to define in Web3. Even ourselves here at The First Mint can be seen as influencers because we have a large following. And as a result, we have to be very careful what we say and also who we work with and be very, very diligent in disclosing when we are being paid to advertise certain projects or certain people. Now, this episode of the podcast, we're going to interview another influencer in the space, Top Shot Fun, someone we've known for a while, someone that we trust. I've met him in person. And we're going to discuss an article that he wrote 2 weeks ago about influencers in the space and what their intentions are and how he has come to classify them. And we're also going to go into detail and get some advice from Top Shot Fun as to what to look for and really how the space maybe should operate when it comes to influencers. And again, nothing here is set in stone. It's a new space. We're new to it. And a lot of us who are considered influencers and the ones that you maybe love as influencers, they're probably new to being influencers. So take everything with a grain of salt. And as usual, keep an open mind. I'm LG Doucette, and this is The First Mint. Ladies and gentlemen of The First Mint, we have somebody on today that I've wanted to chat with for a long time. We've chatted with him on spaces. He definitely probably doesn't consider himself a thought leader in the space, but I would definitely look to him as one. Top Shot Fund, also known as Space Cowboy. How you doing, my man?
Doing well, LG. Thanks for having me on.
Dude, it's a pleasure to chat with you again. You're one of the few people I had the pleasure of actually meeting in real life in New York as well, so you know, we're IRL pals as well as internet friends, which is quite the honor. But we got a really spicy topic to talk about today. We want to talk about NFTs and influencers and whatever that means, because it's probably taken on a whole different meaning today than it has in the last like 10 or 15 years of social media, especially in, you know, Web3. But what we do, TSF, as we're going to call you for short on this pod, we always want to start with the origin story. I think it's always really important. You know, we promote people getting into crypto on this podcast, and we want to hear how you came into the NFT space. Where, how did that happen?
Well, I started off back in 2013 buying my first Bitcoin. I think it was under $1,000 a coin. Then didn't pay too close of attention to it until trading some altcoins in 2017, 2018, like a lot of people did. Got wrecked. Then come December 2020, I was reading a blog by venture capitalist Fred Wilson, who's an investor in Dapper, and he was talking about the Deck the Hoops drop, the first drop for first legendary drop in Series 2. So that introduced me to Top Shot. Dove in there and then been down the rabbit hole ever since, pretty much.
What was your first, like, purchase on Top Shot? Like, how did you get started there?
First purchase was a Series 2, Series 1 base pack. They still had Series 1 packs available. Oh, yeah. It was before Series 2 base packs had been released yet. And then my first purchase on the marketplace, it was during that Tyler Hero promotion. So I think I bought a Tyler Hero moment.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They had that at the start of the season.
Yeah.
For Series 2. And there was like a video of Tyler Hero like being like, welcome to Top Shot.
Yeah, they got me with that campaign.
Wow, how do you feel right now with the Kevin Durant campaign?
Oh, man, I was a little disappointed that, you know how they showed the flashing of the moments on the, like, oh, I have the step back three. I have the playoff game tying shot. Well, when they showed the playoff game tying shot, I'm somewhat known for being in that moment with my gold cowboy hat on, but they actually cropped it out for the commercial. No. So I was a little disappointed.
No way. Wait, well, I didn't know that. You're at that game?
Yeah, I was sitting courtside at that game.
Hold on. I got to go see this shit. Hold on. Wait. So it's a step back. It's the playoff moment, right?
Yeah, the game.
The one where
his Bucks.
But his foot is on the line.
Correct.
That's the one you're talking about. Okay, hold on. That's the block. Hold on. Oh, shit, man. Hold on. So where are you in this image? I'm just looking at it now.
Bottom right of the image, there's two people with gold cowboy hats on. It's myself and my fiance at the game.
Like from the start of the clip, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there you are. Dude, that's amazing. I didn't know that. I actually had no idea. That's so good. Holy shit. Is that the only Top Shot moment that you're in?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
It was shortly after I had bought my CryptoPunk, and I'm known as the Space Cowboy as I picked the moniker. So I figured it would be funny to go to the game. I splurged on some courtside seats, and I didn't know I'd end up being in a moment, but it was funny during the game. A lot of people are seeing me during the action and stuff. It was pretty funny.
Well, congratulations, man. That's really cool. Congrats. Let's level set a little bit. Beyond Top Shot, what, you know, you've got your punk. What does your NFT collection, like, portfolio look like?
So my collection's pretty top heavy at the moment. I have my punk, and then I have an alien doodle that are the vast majority of my collection value wise. But then there's another handful of projects that I own a bunch, including Nuclear Nerds, Peaceful Groupies, Cool Man's Universe, few others I must be forgetting, but yeah, it's so much fun collecting.
How do you go about shaping your portfolio right now? Like, do you kind of just ape into projects you think are cool, like doodles? Like, did you get that early, or how do you evaluate that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't really have a tried and true formula, but take doodles for example. I was lucky enough to get on the whitelist, but then I saw how popular it was becoming, so I doubled down in a sense. Back in November, I sold my last Bored Ape for 50 ETH, and I used 39 of that ETH to buy the Alien Doodle, and it turned out to be a good move. Just a couple months later, recently, Steve Aoki spent 270 ETH on an Alien Doodle, so it's gone up in value a ton.
Can I just ask you, like, because this is something that's like, I'm kind of like a cheapo when it comes to NFTs, which is funny, because then I end up buying a lot of cheap NFTs, which over time then accumulates to a bunch of what I could have just bought a really expensive one. So doing this kind of like big move like you did, where like selling an ape at 50 ETH and then going for like a rare doodle at 39 when the project is still pretty young, it would be so hard for me to pull the trigger on that for some, you know, this 150 grand transaction. How do you evaluate that? Like, how do you do that?
So
how do you convince yourself that you should do it?
It was a difficult decision for me, no doubt, on my end as well. I was consulting family and friends. It was a big deal. But ultimately, like, what pushed me over the edge is probably the gambler in me just taking a chance.
Wait, hold on. What do you mean you're consulting family and friends?
What
do they say? what are they fucking saying?
I kind of got to hear myself out, right? Like, am I really going to spend what you could buy a house for on this animated GIF on the internet? So... And once I kind of give them the story and they're like, not telling me run for the hills, then I can kind of like make my own decision on it.
Are your friends and family like NFT curious or NFT friendly? It sounds like it. If they're like telling you, be like, yeah, sure, go for it.
Yeah, some of them are. Some of them think it's crazy. But like my dad gets a kick out of it, for example. He thinks it's the funniest thing in the world.
I bet, man. Wow. Well, congratulations. Yeah, if Aoki's got one, you know, then that definitely pumps up the price of yours, your alien one. So good for you. What I do want to chat about, though, and speaking of stuff like that, you know, even and that's something I think you were public about as well, you know, your purchases and stuff like that. You a couple weeks ago, you wrote a great blog post in your Substack about navigating influencers in the NFT space. And when people are listening to this, they're going to kind of heard the backstory of what happened this week with Beanie. And basically, you know, I feel like that's probably one of the most concise posts I've seen yours in terms of kind of breaking down how influencers work and who they are and bucketing them and also kind of really, really trying to explain their intentions, right? And I come from the Web2 marketing world where, you know, we went from really listening to bloggers to then trying to mobilize Instagram influencers to now Instagram influencers being this like whole like weird subculture, kind of like a joke in a way, that's like literally something that young people aspire to be. And that's kind of become this weird twisted thing. But where in Web3, I feel like we're starting from scratch, where a lot of people on your list a year ago were completely unknown. And unlike things like Instagram or even blogs, it's like they're not really even selling their likeness or their lifestyle. They're literally, most of them are literally shitposting about projects that they're collecting and now have amassed, you know, 100,000 followers and people, you know, projects will pump and dump at their whim. So what I'd love to hear from you, even just to kind of start from the top, like how do you, I kind of gave my little bit there, but like, how do you go about defining somebody that is classified as an influencer in the space?
Sure. Yeah. For the sake of my blog about it, I define it as people that have over 50,000 followers that focus predominantly on NFTs. So their opinions, you know, quite literally can move the market, to your point, whether it's they intentionally pump or dump or not, but people definitely follow their plays and take action based on their tweets.
How did you classify tell me about the different classes of influences in your post? Because we got pure collector, marketer, creator builder, and hybrid.
Yeah, those are the four categories I kind of place people within. At first, I was going to do it a three-circle Venn diagram, but then I realized that at the end of the day, everyone's a collector, which is one of the beauties of this space. It's really fun at collecting, no matter who you are. So I made it one big circle where everyone's a collector. Then within that, I have a regular two-circle Venn diagram where there's marketers on one side and creators and builders on the other. And when I was going through defining people, it was pretty difficult because, you know, I have relationships with some of the people. I'm friendly with them. We follow each other. And there's definitely good people that fall in all categories. But the main point I wanted to get across to maybe mostly beginners is to understand the context with which people are talking. So if you're a marketer, for example, you may be getting paid to tweet what you tweet. You may be getting a percentage cut of the mint costs that people are paying. Whereas if you're a creator or builder and you're working on your own project, you're obviously biased towards that project, but your intentions are a bit more pure, I would say. Not always, but mostly, for the most case.
Yeah, I've been really curious about it myself, obviously, because, you know, we have a decent following at the First Mint, and, you know, we try not to take on too many partners that are projects that I wouldn't want to buy myself, right? It's like, I don't want to be selling fucking vacuum cleaners, right? So, but at the same time, it's like, it's a funny thing, because sometimes I'm like, well, I just bought this project, and I'm excited about it, and I just want to share it, and I don't want to not share it because I'm like, ooh, people might think I'm pumping it. It's like, no, I like it, you know? And that's like, but at the same time, I'm like, but that's kind of a weird thing. And then even I have to check myself being like, okay, well, do I talk about this on the First Mint as well, like in the account? Because then it might pump it, but I like it, you know? So it's like, it's such a strange thing, you know? And I like what you said. It kind of relates back to what you said, where it's like at the end of the day, everybody here is a collector, right? These are all, we're all tastemakers. We're all looking at stuff we like and wanting to get it.
Yeah, and in a way, everyone's a marketer as well. I think that's what a lot of people love about building in Web3 is that you don't need the traditional marketing budget. You have what's called a community manager, and that role basically gathers feedback from the community, and since the community has an ownership stake, they act as the evangelizers of the project. So it's an interesting scenario. I mean, Web 2, they were selling protein drinks and energy drinks. Now we're selling things that have value, that are like, they're JPEGs, if you will, but, you know, digital collectibles that have, you know, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars of value behind it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it, right? How do you actually, here's a good question for you. Who are your, out of everyone you listed here, you've got at least like 40 or 50 that you listed, and you categorize them personally for you, like based, like purely at a gut feeling, who are your favorite ones? And by favorite, any definition there, but it can be literally just like you like their vibe, you like what they say, to like, this person tweeted about it, I'm going to buy it right now.
Sure. I think so. By favorite, what I'll take that to mean is like the most quintessential impersonation of each category. So for pure collector, our friend Dingaling, he does nothing but buy and hold. And so you can get a good gauge of his intentions based on what he buys, because you know he's basically never going to sell it, at least not in the short term. So that can give you a certain understanding. Whereas someone on the creator builder side, let's go with our friend Andy 8052, the founder of Fractional Art. He's obviously biased towards getting people to use his product, but he's a collector on the side. And so he's never going to go, like, risk his reputation as a co-founder of a company to pump and dump or do anything like that. So you can kind of trust people in the builder, creator builder category a little more. And then in the hybrid category, let's talk about our friend Gary V. He's the biggest influencer in the space, I would say. And he's a quintessential Web2 marketer. So, but he also has his own projects in V Friends and the fly fishing sushi restaurant one. Sure. And he's caught a lot of flack when he tweets about what he buys. You know, people pile in behind him and take him at his word. But he always says that 99% of projects are going to zero and not to follow him. But he still publicly states what he buys. So it's kind of an interesting conundrum there.
That is an interesting one, because it's like, that's almost like the equivalent of like becoming a celebrity and then not being able to go to the grocery store anymore, in a way of like, you know, especially because everybody sees your wallets. Because then anything that he's like, he's just isn't interested in, not as a marketer or anything, that he just wants to grab one of, people freak out that he's buying it.
Right. And then there's even bigger than Gary V, not in NFTs per se, but in crypto, is Elon Musk. He pumps Dogecoin all the time. So he's the ultimate influencer, if you think about it. And he doesn't get any real kick. I mean, he's got a very controversial figure, but he doesn't get any like legal remedies or blowback on that sense. So it's interesting. Yeah. If he can get away with it, well, you know, a lot of other people can as well.
Let's talk about, you know, kind of the situation that sparked this conversation, the beanie situation from this past week. Is we've seen a lot of influencer drama, for sure. We've seen influencers beefing with each other. We've seen, you know, influencers not disclosing that they had received 10 ETH in return for pumping a project or whatever. We've seen influencers dump projects right after pumping them. We've seen all that stuff. And that's the beauty of the blockchain, is that, you know, we can see what they're doing. With this beanie thing, is this a different situation than the others? Are we in a new realm now with what happened?
I think the beanie case is interesting. Just the stuff that came out about his past business practices are pretty unsavory. Obviously, seemed pretty scammy in essence. You know, I'd like to give him a chance to respond, just out of, you know, there's two sides to every story, but it seemed pretty damning on that front. But with him, it's interesting, and people will say, oh, you're just going to defend him because he made you money, or, oh, you're friendly with him, or, oh, you just hate him because he comes off as a brash personality. Like, you can take those three different takes on him, but in reality, it's very complicated. There's not one. It's pretty nuanced, because from the outside perspective, it seems like he's added a ton of value to various projects, including Pixel Vault, which is hugely successful. And not a rug pull and not a scam. So there's things on the good side of his contributions to the space, and then obviously a lot of negative. So it's very nuanced, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, what role do you think, like, kind of going forward beyond him? Because you're right. It's like it's a bit of a mix, right? Where it's like totally in some cases, like I discovered projects or believed in them because of Beanie. And I think we're also at a point now where people can be both, right? You can be both an unsavory character, but also an outlet through which people found other projects. And that's kind of like, that's kind of celebrity in a way, right? It's kind of like a love-hate relationship. And that's the spicy part that makes them, you know, a well-known person, is that you, some people love them, hate them, or both. But in your opinion, like if you were level setting the industry here, what role should influencers play? Like what is, if you were writing the guidebook for this, for how influencers can work with NFT projects, what would that look like?
That's a tough one. I don't know if I can be the judge, jury, and executioner on that.
Well, no, you're not. Listen, I know you're not, but come on. We just want your we know this is, you know, it's not set in stone.
I think in general, the guidelines should be transparent. So don't have other wallets besides what your public wallet is. And then be upfront with your moves and disclose everything. Like, if, for example, if you are doing an ad, make sure it's disclosed, just like the law requires on Instagram. You should put hashtag ad or sponsored, whatever it may be. Tell people transparently up front if you're getting a cut of the Mint project. If you're advising or consulting and you're getting a kickback, that should be known to people before they ape into what you're recommending. And it's tough too, because in Web3, there's no real, since it's decentralized, there's no one to hold each other accountable besides the community. So I think everyone's kind of naturally incentivized to be a good actor in some sense, because their reputation is everything they have. But on the other side, there's a lot of money to be made, and people can do unsavory things for a quick buck. And those are the people we want as a community to get rid of. And so if we act together and make decisions, you know, collectively to root out the negative people, I think that bodes well for everyone going down the future.
If you're a new collector in the space, you've just joined, you just got some ETH, you just got some flow, whatever you're doing, what are you looking for in influencers? Like they're going through your list and they're out on Twitter. What are like the two or three things? It's like this is how you kind of source somebody that you want to follow and whose word you want to latch onto.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, you're naturally going to be drawn to people that are funny and entertaining. There's a lot of hilarious people out there. And so a lot of it is kind of an entertainment element too. It's really fun collecting NFTs. But if you're looking for someone to actually kind of like follow and pay close attention to their moves and see how they operate, you should look for people that are transparent, that provide educational content, that seem to have a good pure following of people that believe in them and have, you know, they've done right by them. And it takes a lot of time. You'll make mistakes. Everyone's fallible. People will, as long as they apologize, it's, you know, we can't hold people to incredibly high standards just because we're all human. But yeah, I'd say those are the main things for new people to be aware of.
What should people avoid?
I say avoid following people at all. Like if someone with a lot of followers tweets that they just bought something, odds are you're too late. I would say get in Discords, talk with people that don't have any followers, see what kind of moves they're making, become friends with people, kind of get your own community and make decisions on your own and see where that takes you at first.
Yeah, I like that. Kind of level set yourself and totally what you're looking for before you really kind of latch onto anybody's word. Okay, great advice. TSF, you know how we're coming to the end here, the recording, and you know how these end if you ever listen to the podcast, and as we play a game called Would You Rather.
All right, let's do it.
And I've got some questions ready here for you. You know how this works?
I think so, yeah.
You have been selected as an influencer for your dream project, whatever, like a brand or whatever it is, or something you're like, I love this. Oh, yes, sure. Please let me be an influencer. I will totally pump this because I love it.
All right.
Would you prefer a percentage of sales or a set sum of money?
Ooh, percentage of sales.
Would you, as an influencer, you've already got a good deal of followers. I like following you and I like your commentary. And let's say you continue to grow and you grow to a million followers and you're on the level Gary Vee. Everyone's like, TSF, we fucking love you. Would you rather be known for being funny yet cruel or smart yet poor?
Smart yet poor.
Smart yet poor. Okay, doesn't want to be cruel. That's fair. Okay, last one. And I'm assuming you're a Nets fan, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, Nets fan. Okay. Kevin Durant fan as well?
Yep.
Okay. Would you rather you are in another moment with KD, but we can see you and he like hugs you after, like he hits a game winning shot and he runs over and he hugs you and lifts you up in the air because he's just so happy that you're there. But the Nets never win the championship.
Oh, shit.
Or that KD comes out with like a new, like an ultimate Top Shot moment or a totally new line of NFTs, but he makes a one of one and he gives it to you, but you can never tell anybody.
Ooh. I got to go with the latter. I'll take the one of one with the chance of them still winning a championship.
And nobody will ever know that you have it.
Yeah, it'll be me and KD's little secret.
There you go. End it right there. You, awesome. You and KD's little secret. Yeah. Well, dude, thank you so much for coming on and really appreciate your opinion. And, you know, continue to lean on you as we navigate the space together.
It's thanks, been an interesting
LG. Couple of years, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And that is going to do it for us today, folks. Thank you again to Top Shot Fund for making time to come on the show. And as usual, all those tips, it all boils down to doing your own research and trusting your gut. And everything you heard on the show today doesn't constitute financial advice. We'll see you next time on The First Minute.